SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. Yesterday, from the sales arena to the racing ovals, a really entertaining day. Here it is, Thursday in September, and undoubtedly, Kentucky Downs was going to have a lot to do with the, you know, the racing portion of the activity. But there were Indiana bred stakes at Indiana Grand. Kept an eye on those, actually. And then a piece of news that came out of Delaware Park. Late in the season, obviously, there at Newark. And Kathleen O'Connell, I'll start with that piece of news because she's someone that absolutely demands respect and appreciation. Her 2000th career win, and is somebody that really has been an exemplary horseman for years, and operates seemingly somehow, despite 2,000 wins, somehow operates, it seems, under the radar. I always enjoy a chance to congratulate Kathleen O'Connell on the various successes that she's enjoyed and continues to enjoy. We'll talk to her in the second half of the show, and she'll reflect on her career. Came out of Detroit. Got on the racetrack. In fact, a couple of stories today are going to include places like DRC and Hazel Park. Kathleen's one of them. The other one, one of the most enchanting stories of the year so far. We'll get to that momentarily. But Kathleen O'Connell, after yesterday, our conversation with Stanley Huff, who has won over 2,000 races as well, and another Midwest guy, actually, when you think, I hadn't made the connection until now, but Stanley, Chicago, I think, originally, and like P.G. Johnson, another in that realm. But O'Connell started walking hots at Hazel, and you know, yesterday that conversation with Stan Huff included a bittersweet reference to Calder, where Stanley was dominant for prime period of Calder's history. Kathleen O'Connell, a longtime resident at Calder, now Gulfstream West. And I really haven't talked about the floating last month, actually, of Churchill, who would like to vacate the racing license in favor of a High Life Fronton. And that actually has to be at some point visited. There's a bunch of those kinds of things going on down in Florida, more decoupling attempts. But that for another day, because we're going to, I think, really appreciate and celebrate the people who ply the trade fairly you know, fairly anonymously, Kathleen, more high profile than two of our other horsemen guests, because yesterday at Kentucky Downs, while million-dollar yearlings were changing hands at Keeneland, off to the west and the south, at Kentucky Downs, the fourth day of racing, and very entertaining. The two stakes and the performance of Arrogate's little sister, Osari, for Jonathan Thomas, and Bridalwood, the Malones, handled really confidently on the front end by Jose Ortiz. Ortiz had a terrific day yesterday at Kentucky Downs. Three wins? And I didn't check the final standings because I was kicking the cat a little over the disqualification, frankly. But Ortiz, it looked like, was on his way to winning the jockey bet yesterday. And after Jonathan Thomas sent out Osari, Calumet Homebred Channel Cat, in a thriller over Mike Maker's Column Road. And Column Road at 20-1 ran a valiant race. 5-2 on Channel Cat, second choice. And Column Road, a $62,500 claim at Belmont late in the spring. And it has run okay in allowance company. And ran a huge race here and really did just get beat. Was rallying, looked like a winner. Luis Saez held Channel Cat together. And the English Channel, who really, I made the comment on Twitter, really has kept nice company, including two times that during the summer that he faced off against Catholic Boy in the Pennine Ridge and then in the Belmont Derby. And he was only beaten a handful of lengths both times, four or five lengths. It was late arriving in the American turf as well. And just got beat by Focus Group at Saratoga. Channel Cat breaks through. Second choice behind Bandua, who ran evenly, but really didn't rally going up the hill. Just sort of idled a little bit. Captivating Moon was third between Column Road and Bandua. So the Dueling Ground Derby, the Dueling Ground Oaks, just part of a entertaining day. I referenced the nightcap. To me, that was a 50-50 call. I knew when the stewards were going back and forth and back and forth and watching the replay, I knew that they were going to take St. Denman down. And I walked, went to the kitchen. Tina had just gotten home, and I knew I was a chicken in a pot. So was live with St. Denman and Silver Shield. And if St. Denman stays up, it's a nice enough, you know, it was 350-ish for the pick four. But Tyler Gaffleone claimed foul. To me, that was kind of a race-riding situation. Gaffleone was in tight. Joe Rocco had him pinned on the rail. And I mean, did he come over and confront? Yeah, he did. That's what you do. You confront. You want your horse to eyeball, and I wouldn't fault Joe Rocco at all for the way he rode down the stretch. It was in, you know, it was in tight. This is one where I'll say I'm well aware that my opinion's colored by, you know, having a ticket taken out of the pocket, to be honest. So there was a nice Cassie double as well. The races we went over with Byron King and Seth Merrow, pretty much all the winners. Then there were no, at least in the second half of the card, no big prices. But Sanity, that was an exciting finish too with the Craik, Al Stahl. But it was Cassie and Giroux and Gabe Grossberg's City Zip Philly, Sanity, and Summer Luck. We had talked pretty much quite a bit about Summer Luck, and particularly as a three-year-old, very solid. And then here is a four-year-old, has been nibbling a little bit, and we'll see. We'll see if Gary Barber keeps her in training, and it might be worthwhile. It feels like maybe there's a step forward to come. That's her second try at Kentucky Downs. She was second last year as well in the Dueling Ground Oaks. So she likes it there, and Summer Luck under Jose Ortiz came running by May Lilly, who mid-stretch looked a winner. But, of course, mid-stretch is only the first of two camera angles that you get to watch. And you think to yourself, oh, good, I'm in good shape. And then suddenly you're not in good shape. Suddenly there's there's a lot more running yet to come when the camera switches up the hill. The earlier part of the card featured the best prices and the fireworks. And that included right in the first, that Salvatore Mundi getting Lasix first time, which is something that McPeak will do. He'll run him without Lasix for a little bit. And then move to it. And Salvatore Mundi and another horse from the outside. And that continues to be worth noting. The horses that Byron King mentioned it yesterday. The horses on the outside, the Marty McGee open air outside box, that got us to the second and third yesterday. And at 123-1, Country Chick, a Country Day 4-year-old filly trained by Floyd Cobb, 73 years old, been training for close to 50 years. He's got a farm in Paris and ships over daily to the Thoroughbred Training Center in Lexington and trains his horses when necessary, when they got to get on the racetrack. He comes back to the races based on horses kind of coming into his arena, and Country Chick really stepped up, and this was really quite fun. We're going to talk to Floyd Cobb at the top of hour two. He gave $2,000 for Country Chick. He's got another Country Day filly that he likes. He admitted that he was surprised at how well she ran. She had broken her maiden at Belterra going five on July 4th. And then went to Presque Isle. Floyd Cobb ships all over the place. Indiana, Ellis, and he's run at Keeneland and Churchill and you name it. Turfway, he's wherever the racing. And obviously, if he's been training since 1970, he raced at Latonia before he became Turfway. We'll have fun talking to Floyd, and he'll tell you about his approach and his life around the game. Kind of fun. I first saw his name, must have been last year, and I suppose if you think about it, you've seen it in the PPs because he's running all these places. But I saw that there was a piece that the Turfway publicity people did about an owner, Julie Sebastian, and she has worked off of Floyd Cobb's farm. And so when I saw his name, and some people asked about L.V. Cobb, and he's not related. That was one of the questions that popped up. So we'll talk to Floyd Cobb in addition to Kathleen O'Connell and also to Judd Becker. Bushrod, an Arizona bred, won the starter allowance, the third race, and not at a big price, 4-1, but did beat a 1-2 entry. And Judd Becker and his partner, Tim Rawson, they claimed this horse from Hugh Robertson for $18,000. That came at Arlington in May. And he's had been running in second level allowances. He cleared that condition. He started to get good at the end of the summer, then came back and he won the Mystic Lake Turf Express. So we're going to talk to Judd Becker, too. And word is that he trains Bushrod out in a cornfield when he's not at the racetrack, a Wisconsin cornfield. So Judd Becker, Floyd Cobb, Kathleen O'Connell, Jessica Martini from the TDN. We'll talk about yesterday's more fireworks. Unbelievable. $7 million sellers. Andrew Hawkins is going to join us. We'll kick off our Hong Kong coverage next. Andy Serling later, too. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes in on this Thursday, and the timing is interesting to get started on our Hong Kong Jockey Club coverage for the 2018-2019 season. They've been underway for a couple of weeks, and as the East Coast prepares for landfall, which actually probably is happening as we speak, the Outer Banks and so forth, Wilmington, North Carolina, etc., there's concerns of a typhoon bearing down in Hong Kong's direction as well. So a similar storyline, but we got to get our introduction to the 2018-2019 season. HKJC Andrew Hawkins joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be back with you.
Well, and I missed you for the opening week in the post-Saratoga mayhem that is, you know, it's kind of a bit of a tidal wave. Maybe that's the wrong word to use, considering what you guys are dealing with. But great to get started and the season underway. And there's been already any number of interesting storylines, not just for Hong Kong, but also in the area. Last week, Andrew, I told everybody going into the weekend, you know, Korea had their big day, and in fact, Ron Fauchot went with Chubbalicious, Mrs. Benoit's sprinter, and actually finished fourth in that Korea sprint. So the Australasia action really getting started in earnest.
Most definitely. With Korea, I was fortunate enough to be trackside in Seoul as they had their big meeting last weekend. And it was interesting to see the way that this race, these races are developing, because with Korea, it's seen as this emerging force in the thoroughbred industry, and especially within the Asian scene. Obviously, you've got Hong Kong and Japan as your big countries, Singapore to a lesser extent, but Korea is definitely seen as the emerging force. And so it was interesting to be there and to experience it. As you say, Chubbalicious ran fourth, very good race from Chubbalicious, given that he just missed the start and he was on the back foot early. He struggled to get into a rhythm. I was standing right next to or right near Ron. And once the horse missed the start, I saw Ron was downhearted, to say the least. But the horse ran a fantastic race, and I'm sure, look, it'll be interesting to see whether Chubbalicious travels elsewhere, maybe to Dubai, who knows. But it was an interesting race as well, the Korea Sprint, because you had Japan won the race, and Japan won the race last year as well, but you had Hong Kong second, you had a local from Korea in third, and you had an American horse fourth. So that Korea race, the two Korea races in September are going to be more of an international fixture, I think you'll see. But as you say, it's becoming an important time of year for racing in the Australasia region. Obviously, we're getting underway. Japan's about to start its back end of the year, where they have a number of Group 1s, obviously building up towards the Japan Cup and the Arima Kinnan towards the end of the year. And obviously in Australia, it's probably the most important time of the year with the Spring Carnival.
Well, exactly, and we got Winx running coming up at Royal Randwick. That everybody will get excited about, 26 straight, and of course you keep tabs on her as well. Let's get into the Hong Kong season, and as the curtain went up, Andrew, any, you know, notable changes from the end of the season? And there's always, you know, there's always a couple of shifts in the training outfits that that are frankly allowed or commissioned to be included in Hong Kong. There's always some fresh faces, and give everybody the the early glance at what we're going to see as the meet and the bi-weekly or bi stands each week at Happy Valley and at Sha Tin, and as things unfold.
Yeah, as you say, it's always an ever-developing a roster. You know, with the jockey colony here in Hong Kong, it's always it changes quite frequently. With Hong Kong, the biggest change was the departure of Joe Moreira after five seasons at the end of last year. Obviously, he was a three-time champion jockey in Hong Kong. He just got edged out as he was going for a fourth championship by Zach Person. But the departure of Joe Moreira to Japan obviously leaves a gaping hole. We've also had the departure of Tommy Berry from Australia. Brett Preble's also gone back to Australia. And Olivier Deleuze, who has been in Hong Kong for the best part of two decades, has also left. So there are a number of voids there to be filled. We've had two South African jockeys arrive, Callan Murray and also Grant Van Niekerk, both of them Group 1 or Grade 1 winning riders down in South Africa. Grant Van Niekerk especially had quite some success this year, and he's begun well. He won the first race of the season in Hong Kong, so a good start for him. That's always seen as auspicious by the local owners, so it will be interesting to see how he goes. But there is a gap there, an opportunity for a world-class rider to step into Hong Kong and potentially get a lot of opportunities that they may not otherwise get. There is some talk of a number of riders that may come to Hong Kong. Sylvester D'Souza is one name that keeps popping up, but it'll be interesting to see who comes out potentially over the Northern Hemisphere winter and gets the opportunity to ride in Hong Kong. It's possible that Ryan Moore might come to Hong Kong for a little bit as well. But that's the jockey front. On the training front, we had the departure of two long-standing trainers in Hong Kong. Armand Lee was one of them. He's been a journeyman sort of trainer for a number of seasons. He, unfortunately, in Hong Kong, you have to reach a certain benchmark to be able to continue training among one of the 24 spots that they have for trainers in Hong Kong. And for the third season, he didn't make it. So, unfortunately, he retired. And the other one is Derek Cruz, who had been a trainer in Hong Kong for about 25 years. He'd be best known to international audiences. He had a horse called Joyen Fun who won an Alquaz Sprint in Dubai, was placed in an Alquaz Sprint as well. So he has retired back to New Zealand, where his sons are based. And in the absence of Armand and also Derek, we've now got a new trainer called Jimmy Ting, who has started up. And he's actually done very well at the first four meetings we've had in Hong Kong, the first four race cards. He's actually trained the first winner at three of those four meetings. So he's begun very well. He's a trainer to watch. And, yes, it's going to be very interesting now. It's a different landscape to what it was last season with the departure of some of these familiar faces.
Well, for those that either are just signing on and haven't followed the last couple of years' visits with Pat Cummings and with you as well, and Paul Matisse gives us some domestic insight about approaching it from this side and wagering. For you this year, give us you mentioned the first four meetings, and we'll turn toward what's upcoming. And, of course, I mentioned the weather watch, a bit of a concern. National Day coming up in 2 weeks, one of the big early season markers. Anything that's caught your eye in terms of these early 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been interesting this year. There haven't been as many of the big names stepping out early. Sometimes you'll get the big names stepping out either on the first day. There's a handicap that they can run in, which we didn't see many of them in there this year. So a lot of them are biding their time. you were seeing a lot more of the big names, horses like your Pakistan Star, Beauty Generation, Time Warp, Werther. A lot of them are taking a little bit slower, and we probably won't see them until late October. But for the first couple of weeks, we've had a couple of interesting horses come through. We had Winner's Way win the opening day feature, which is the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region Chief Executives Cup. Look, he's a horse that's probably not going to get above G3, G2 sort of level, but he's an honest horse, and it's going to be interesting to see where he progresses to. We've had a horse last weekend who's run at the first two weekend meetings called Rattan, who he's been beaten both times, but he looks a horse that's potentially got some group wins in him at some point. You'll expect to see him in stakes company later in the season. But as I say, it's been a quiet opening in terms of the horse scene. We're still waiting to see some of these horses. Of course, in Hong Kong, we're very big on barrier trials, where horses get the chance to work their way up into fitness before they actually step out on race day. And we've seen a number of good horses step out here in terms of horses like Singapore Sling, who won the Classic Cup, and Ping Hai Star, who won the Derby, horses like Hot King Prawn, who looks a sprinter on the rise. So they're nearly here. They're going to be very close to racing. Probably we'll start to see them October 1st, which, as you say, is National Day. But until then, we're sort of just biding time, waiting for some of these good horses to step out.
Got to mention on a specific trainer front, tough not to remark on Jimmy Ting, who has burst out of the gate a little bit. He's only sent 9 starters out, Andrew. He's got 4 wins.
He has. And the most fascinating part is, as I say, he's only just started. This is his first ever season. So these are his first 9 runners. He won with his first 2 runners, which is unheard of, really. And he won with his first runner at Shark Tin and his first runner at Happy Valley. So he's really come out of the gates. The thing is, he's been getting a few of these horses from other trainers who, for one reason or another, they just need that stable change. They appreciate a different method of training or a different training style. So I wouldn't necessarily expect him to continue. I think he's going to have a good season. I don't think he's going to have a season where he's going to win the championship or is going to be up in championship contention. But he's definitely a trainer to watch. And as you say, in this early part of the season, when he's trying to make a name for himself, he's definitely the sort of trainer that you want to be following.
Yeah, it's a cool story. And he was a race rider himself and has been working as an assistant. I see that he worked for Michael Chang and had a nice, what feels like a nice tutelage. But this is some way to break into the Hong Kong Jockey Club scene. 4 wins from his first 9 starters and a second and a third. So from a percentage standpoint, keep an eye on Jimmy Ting. I wanted to throw that one at you. Give everybody a feel for where you stand. They ran yesterday or last night and at Happy Valley. What is the status weather-wise? How much of a threat is this typhoon?
Yeah, this typhoon looks pretty big. I've been seeing a lot of the news here about Hurricane Florence, and they're comparing the two. Apparently, they're very similar in terms of size, so it's going to be quite a dangerous typhoon coming through. Now, at the moment, the track is showing it going through the Philippines, which will obviously not be great for the Philippines, but it means that it's likely to be A, less strong, and also it's likely to be to probably head south of Hong Kong, which means that it's not going to be as severe, which means it's probably a 50-50 chance we race on Sunday. It's a rarity in Hong Kong for these. It's a rarity for these meetings to get cancelled due to weather. I think, as I said, or I read earlier today, that it was twice in the last decade that there have been meetings cancelled due to typhoons. So it's a rarity, but the worst of it is meant to come during the race meeting on Sunday. So that's why it may be under threat. You're looking at gusts potentially of 120, 130 miles per hour, which obviously would make for dangerous racing weather. So I'd say it's probably, you'd probably say it's unlikely at the moment that we race, but it's hard to tell, and a lot can happen as the typhoon tracks across the Philippines.
How do they typically handle when this happens? How do they make up some of the, you know, some of the standards on the cards? There's, you know, a couple different, you know, there's lots of handicaps there. I don't see that there's a stake per se, but how would they make up a card?
Yeah, very good question. What they would do normally, they have weeks left throughout the year that they are able to hold contingency meetings, and it's purely for typhoon reasons, because there's no other reason really in Hong Kong that a meeting would be postponed or lost. So at this stage, it's funny because we're only a couple of weeks in, but the first of the contingency weeks actually comes up next week, because it's a it's early in the season. Typhoons generally come in this sort of September region. Now, because of the logistics, they wouldn't be able to put a meeting next week. So my understanding is that they would actually replace this meeting by holding a meeting between Christmas and New Year, which there isn't currently one scheduled. I think there's one scheduled for the 26th of December, and there's one scheduled for the 1st of January. So they'd put another race day in December. But as you say, for horses that have the opportunity to run here and look primed for this meeting here, it's obviously a lost opportunity for them. Look, there are plenty of races around at the moment. A lot of these races aren't attracting full fields. So there are opportunities for them to run, but it's obviously not an ideal situation for anyone. And let's just look. I hope for the owners' sake that we do race on Sunday. But obviously, safety comes first, and horse welfare, race fan welfare, participant welfare, it comes first. And you just don't want to be racing in conditions that could be as nasty as they sound.
Sure. Any highlights, though, that catch your eye looking forward to Sunday morning?
Yeah, look, there are a couple. These, as you said, they're mostly restricted handicaps. But there are a couple of horses that I'm really interested to see. We've got a horse coming up in race 8, so I think it'll be about 5 a.m. or so Eastern time, but there's a horse called Cordyceps stepping out, who has had two starts in Hong Kong. He won his most recent start, but what was really impressive about the way that he won that day, obviously in Hong Kong they're quite big on stats, and there was a stat that day where he ran a very, very slick last sectional, which is the final quarter in Hong Kong, and that day his final quarter was measured against all the other final quarters over that course and distance during the 2017-18 season. And it was comparable to most of our stakes horses. So he's on a list of the top 10 with horses like Mr. Stunning, DB Pin, Seasons Bloom, Group 1 horses, and yet this horse is right down in the ratings. He's a Class 4 restricted galloper. So he's going to be one that's very interesting to watch, because he looks like he could potentially progress higher. I know quite a few people are excited to see him. Also, I'd say keep an eye on the Nightcap, race 10. It's a race over the straight 1,000, but there's a number of horses here that look like they're potentially stakes grade. There's a horse called Montreal stepping out, a former Australian galloper, who won very impressively two back. He had an injury last time out when he raced. But if you keep an eye on him, Montreal, he's going to be ridden by Zach Purton. He's definitely a horse that looks to be heading higher, so he's worth watching as well.
Well, Cordyceps in the 8th is your 3, Montreal your 7 in the 10th. And, Andrew, nice to get started. Before we close, I do want to have you update everybody on the exploits of Winx, and she returns as well this weekend.
Yeah, she does. Australia's favourite mare. Look, she's probably either in the final campaign of her career or the penultimate campaign. Obviously, down in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, she wouldn't be going to stud until sort of this time next year. So they may race her on again at the first half of next year. But there's a lot of talk down in Australia that this might be her final campaign. She's obviously heading towards a fourth Cox Plate, which would be unprecedented. We've had Kingston Town in Australia win three. He won 1980, 1981, and 1982. But Winx is aiming to finally break that record that no one ever expected they'd see, at least in terms of Australian racing pundits. So she stepped out this weekend in the George Main Stakes. I think it's now known as the Colgate Optic White Stakes, thanks to sponsorship. Look, it's the second run of her preparation. She was very good first up a month ago in the race that's named after her now, the Winx Stakes. This is a good stepping stone for her before she then steps up again. So this is a mile. She'll step up to 10 furlongs in a couple of weeks at Flemington, the Turnbull Stakes. But this looks a very good stepping stone for her. She's won the race twice before. And even though there's a filly in the race, a four-year-old filly by the name of Unforgotten, who is her stablemate, who has a very similar profile to where Winx was three, 4 years ago. I think that Winx should be too good again, and I think that it's definitely worth getting up to watch her in action. If you haven't done it already, it's something to marvel at. And it's funny, actually, because you go to Australia, and there is a recognition that in the United States, she has an incredible following, an incredible popularity, and so I'm sure that once again there'll be plenty of Americans up watching her in the early hours of the morning.
Well, and they should be watching the racing from Sha Tin and Happy Valley early in the mornings, whether it's the Wednesday evening, Thursday morning edition from Happy Valley or into Saturday night, Sunday morning for Sha Tin. And we'll be back into our regular swing of visits with Andrew Hawkins and HKJC.com. The website, so voluminous and so much information available, and we'll have Andrew guide you through each and every week. Andrew, I appreciate it, and we hope I hope the best for the Philippines for the typhoon, much the same as we're hoping for the best for the Carolinas here with Florence. Follow Andrew NJ Hawkins. You get not just the action from Hong Kong, but his perspective on everything in Australasia and in international racing overall. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. I look forward to chatting to you again next week.
Absolutely. Andrew Hawkins. Let's take a break here, coming up toward the 15-minute mark into hour two, and we're going to talk to Judd Becker, who was one of two let's call it like it is, underknown and new names that won under the bright glare at Kentucky Downs. Last day of racing today, of course, of the 5 days. It's been spectacular. The handle numbers, phenomenal. The handle numbers at Keeneland, too. Jessica Martini, an hour from now, to talk about what went on day three. The last book, session of book one today, 1 o'clock, and we'll see about any more, how many more seven-figure sellers, 20 so far in 3 days. I mean, the numbers, just eye-crossing, actually, how they're the trade, and a lot of the same big names, I mean, that we've been talking about here the first 3 days of the sale. Pharaoh, tremendous. Warfront, $2 million hips. Quality Road, Uncle Mo, Dagliadoro, Ghost Zapper. Some very interesting themes, too, to touch on. Shadwell, the Sheikh Hamdan, continues to be an aggressive acquire of bloodstock, and of course his brother is holding his own too. Godolphin continues to lead all buyers so far. So Jessica Martini later this morning, Judd Becker next. Floyd Cobb with the $248 winner. He'll join us. And Kathleen O'Connell, win number 2,000 in her great career. Back after this with Judd Becker.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through Sunday, September 23rd, with the L.A. County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse with a new first post time. The exciting daytime racing action will now start at 2 p.m. Pacific every Thursday through Sunday. The meet is highlighted by three $100,000 stakes races, the Barrett's Juvenile, Barrett's Debutante, and the brand new Los Alamitos Special at 1¼ miles. And we've also added a second Pick 5 wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, horse players, don't forget that Los Alamitos will host a pair of live money daytime handicapping contests on Saturday, September 15th, and then again on Saturday, September 22nd. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC in Las Vegas. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider through September 23rd. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm a troubled man, changed by the things I do. True, but it's funny how they all remember you. You know, it could be different. Time to do something new. Giving everything to be a happy man. Gotta understand, played by the friends I lose. Who's getting out of hand?
We're back in the races. Coming up toward the top of the hour, and the back-to-back wins yesterday at Kentucky Downs, the $248 mutual for Floyd Cobb and Country Chick, and then minutes later, Judd Becker sent out the winner, Bushrod, an Arizona bred that he poached from Hugh Robertson. And since then, kind of steadily improved. And this is a prep toward the claiming crown, and a real pleasure to have Judd Becker join us. Judd, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is nice. You and your partner, Tim Rawson, and I got a little bit of insight into this story because Tim met Eric Hamelbeck from the HBPA in the paddock, and they were talking as you were saddling, and this is a nice story, and this is a horse that very quickly has earned enough money to be your top earner, and you know, you've sent out winners, you know, the last 10 years. Talk about Bushrod and winning yesterday?
It's just pretty exciting. You know, since I got him, he just seems like he just gets better and better each time. He's surely been my best horse that I've taken, and I'm just enjoying the ride right now.
Who picked him out? You guys grabbed him at Arlington.
Yeah, I kind of picked him out. We both liked the horse, so, you know. I pointed him out, and Tim liked him too, so we decided to go in after him.
18,000, and Hugh Robertson does a real good job, and to get a horse from him, and to then slowly you can see in this series of turf sprints, and also on the poly at Arlington, he just is getting, as he matures, he's 5 years old. It feels like one of those stories. A horse reaches maturity, and he's just getting better with more experience. He must be sound. He's made 35 career starts for a 5 year old.
Oh yeah, he's sound, and we even thought when we went to claim him that even with Hugh, he looked like he was improved. This was his best year. That was one thing. He was having his best year as a five-year-old even before we took him, as far as numbers and stuff. So, and he's just kept getting better and better. We train off the farm, so I don't know, he must enjoy the farm life.
Talk about the farm, because that's part of what is kind of fun about this story. Because Tim told Eric that you train him out in a cornfield in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I just got a half mile track, a little better than a half mile track. Some years it's corn, some years it's soybeans, just whatever. But he just. He really enjoys being, he's just a happy-go-lucky, friendly, just enjoys the whole works, seems like.
That's tremendous. He's by Gray Memo, and he's out of a Moscow Ballet mare. Some fun breeding, bred in Arizona originally. Training off the farm, I want you to talk about your background too. And you operate through the greater Midwest, and seems like you're in an interesting position, to be able to go to places like Canterbury, Prairie Meadows, Arlington, wherever. You're a fairly easy ship all around.
I mean, tied down to one place, I can go wherever I feel like it, and just enjoy it. I do it for, I gotta, try to make money, but I ain't in it hardcore like some of these guys. Only have a few horses, and I started off when I was a kid being a jockey in the bushes, and I tried the track life and didn't really enjoy that. So I love the game, and this is the way I can play it from the farm.
I love it. So you've got, so it's a working farm first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then how many horses typically are you handling?
A handful, 5, 6, I don't like to get any more than 6. That's pushing it, but, it all depends. 2, 3, up to 6, 7. But I don't like to get any more, too many more than 6. But...
The win at Canterbury in the Mystic Lake Express in the stake, and you've won your himself some stakes over the years, and to have this horse be able to go to Kentucky Downs, run for a $100,000 purse, and you know he's eligible for you know virtually everything. I mean, in terms of starter allowances, and I guess you can't resist pointing for the claiming crown.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we'll definitely look at it when the time comes. You know, it's just hard to say right now. You know. What we're going to do, it seems, you know, see how the horse comes back and, you know, let him tell us. You know, we've had some where we've run him back-to-back on short dates, but, I mean, he's bounced back from every race. And just, you know, it's like that claim and crown come up, and it's like, you know, he's just dragging me around the track, you know. Let's try for it, you know, and. You know, his best surface might even be the poly. I mean, the one race he ran on the poly, that, you know, was just a monster of a race. I mean, he beat a heck of a horse that day.
Now, looking back, goodbye Greg and Gorgeous George. In fact, there's a bunch of winners came out of that allowance race at Arlington.
Oh, yeah. At goodbye Greg, he's a heck of a horse. Well, I mean, Gorgeous George has, you know, won his share, too. But.
Well, a fun story. And you know, for Adam Bacisa, a nice win for him, too. This is a kid that really kind of burst on the scene over the winter and down in New Orleans. And he's struggled a little bit at Kentucky Downs, surprisingly, and had only one win the first three race days. How many have you run? Had you run before at Kentucky Downs?
No, this was the first time, so it was new experience. I've never been to a place like that before.
It's pretty cool. It's very different. And, you know, frankly, the way you describe Bushrod as a horse that has enjoyed life away from the racetrack, it sounds like, you know, that kind of a course. And, you know, 6.5 furlongs there is a little bit different, too. That's because of the way the course is laid out. That's a bit of a stretch for a horse that's been running 5, 5.5.
Yeah, but he, when he was a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, you know, they were stretching him out, just galloping him. You know, he seems like he could run a route of ground, but, you know, am I going to change him? No. He's running so good. So I really wasn't worried about the 6.5. The only thing I was worried about is that he might be too fresh because we stayed right down there at Kentucky after it got rained out that, you know, maybe he'd be a little keen that, and wanting to go to the lead, you know. But, you know, Adam did a good job of being able to rate him, and, you know, and then he just, you know, when he asked him, he'd come a running, so.
Gets past the Mike Maker, Jose Ortiz Belgian, who was part of that 1-2 entry, and got to feel okay to go get the money and beat beat an entry like that, and for Bacisa to beat Jose Ortiz. Thought this was just an irresistible story that I wanted you to tell, and just really, you know, one of the things, Judd, that we love about the sport is that you don't have to be a big operation. You don't have to have dozens and hundreds of horses. When a good horse person gets their hands on a horse with talent, they can win at high levels, and that's what's so nice about this.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Well, a chance also to ask you about the horse coming up at Canterbury. What about this the starter tomorrow or Friday? Friday.
Yeah. Friday.
It's Mike's turn.
Oh, I don't. Yeah. I don't know. That one's a tough to say. You know, just getting it. So, you know, I don't know.
This is a Louisiana bread. You don't mind the where they come from, right? As long as they can.
No, it don't matter.
No. How did you come by this horse?
Which one?
It's Mike's turn. The one at Canterbury tomorrow.
Yeah, that's Mark Kane's horse. So it's not one I own.
Okay.
You know, we've done a little business together. We had a partnership on a baby that didn't work out. So, a lot of my horses I do are my own, or, you know, I'm in partners with somebody else. So, I don't have any interest as far as that one. But, you know, a lot of them I do have.
But, well... Bushrod has won the most money for you, and over the last 10 years or so that you've been sending them out in your name, and obviously has got plenty of potential. The horse to keep track of that seems like he's still improving. So delighted to see you win a race like that yesterday, and we'll see if he doesn't take you to Gulfstream in December and the Claiming Crown.
Yeah, we'll see.
Excellent. Well, Judd Becker, continued success. I appreciate you visiting.
All right, thank you.
Judd Becker and Bushrod, and the win yesterday, he and his partner Tim Rawson come away. And you look at the steady improvement, and this is a horse that can win on the lead. He can win from just off, and stretching to 6.5. After a series of 5-furlong type sprints. One of the two really good stories at Kentucky Downs yesterday. The other one, Floyd Cobb. He's going to join us after the break, top of the hour here. And 73-year-old Floyd Cobb, he's back training. A very similar story. He's got a farm in Paris, Kentucky. He's been sending horses out, a few dozen starts. Some years as many as 50 starts a year. Wins his share, and he comes away with a $248 winner yesterday, Country Chick, and we'll hear his story next. Floyd Cobb, Kathleen O'Connell coming up as well. She gets her share of winners, and she's been getting them for a long time. Yesterday, win 2,000. Kathleen O'Connell. Jessica Martini later, and Andy Serling at 11 o'clock as well. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through Sunday, September 23rd, with the LA County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse with a new first post time. The exciting daytime racing action will now start at 2 p.m. Pacific every Thursday through Sunday. The meet is highlighted by three $100,000 stakes races, the Barrett's Juvenile, Barrett's Debutante, and the brand new Los Alamitos Special at 1.25 miles. And we've also added a second Pick 5 wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, horse players, don't forget that Los Alamitos will host a pair of live money daytime handicapping contests on Saturday, September 15th, and then again on Saturday, September 22nd. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC in Las Vegas. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider through September 23rd. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, Visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.